think it's appropriate to mention to you that in this political atmosphere that we are now in, my incredibly wonderful father-in-law, who's almost 101 years old and is still very sharp, you'll get it, said to my husband and I after Tuesday's election, "Well, we've all lived through this kind of political change before, and we'll all live through it again." And then he hesitated and said, "Well, you will, maybe I won't." But it just tells you he's on top of things. So what I really want to talk about is many of the same things that were already addressed, but looking at it from the women's point of view. So I am thrilled of two threads that I have heard throughout today, really, is about looking at women throughout their lifespan, because of course we need to have young girls healthy and young women, and of course even as we age, we want women to be healthy throughout their lifespan, and that will help produce healthy families as well. That's one theme that that I've heard about, and the other one, I'm losing it, but I'll come back to it. How do we do? Oh, you're doing those? Okay. I just do this one here, or can I do this one? Okay, that's great. So I'm taking a step back to say, let's look at women and where they get their health insurance. And as you can see from this, majority of women get coverage through their employer-sponsored insurance, but many of them get it through a family member as a dependent. And interestingly, men do not get coverage as frequently as a family member. They also do not get coverage through public insurance as much. And the part of the reason for that, of course, is how Medicaid is designed. So at the luncheon, Cuddlechuck said something like 45% of women in this country get Medicaid. Well, that's for, as you know, maternity care. It isn't really throughout their lifespan, and that's what we have to keep looking at. Really, the Medicaid eligibility, the median Medicaid eligibility, now I'm talking about parents with dependent children, is about 64% of poverty. So that is quite low. And of course, if you are not a parent, you don't get Medicaid at all unless you're disabled or elderly. And that's why we have more women in public insurance. The individual market is about the same, and men, therefore, are much more uninsured. That one? No. This one. Okay. So on average, women do use more health services, of course, reproductive health services and so forth. And I have never really seen studies to show that women, besides the reproductive health, are either sicker or they just are more willing to go out and get help. But on average, they do get more health services. But that doesn't mean each one of us does. Some obviously get more than others. Now, taking again, looking at women having affordability care issues, if you look at the bottom, what we are looking at here are women who said they did not fill a prescription, did not see a specialist when needed, skipped recommended medical tests, and did not follow up on some kind of medical issue. And all throughout all the different levels of insurance, women are clearly affected more than men. Same with preventive health services. Both men and women have problems, but women even more so. So a couple years ago now, it's in late 2007, I believe, we did an important study looking at the individual market and women. And I hope you heard about it. What we found was that women are consistently charged more than men in the individual market at various ages. Now, men get charged a little bit more when they get into over 50, but of course, as we all turn 65, then we're all on Medicare and it evens it out. There are wide variations, and again, the understanding is that, well, insurance companies say, well, women use more services. And our point is, well, not everyone does. And like as a country, we have stopped charging different rates by race, we think it's high time we stopped charging different rates by gender. Additionally, what we did find was that maternity coverage did not account for the difference. And here's what we found. Again, this is the individual market. So only 12% of the plans we looked at actually had what we called comprehensive maternity coverage. Another small chunk had something like a $2,000 limit. So people thought they were getting maternity coverage, and it turned out it was a flat rate. 20% people had to buy a rider, and I don't know if you know how that works, but you can't even use your rider for a year often. It's expensive, and again, you don't even really know what you're buying for. So maternity coverage, not that I have to explain it to you, it's an important issue as we move forward in getting everybody comprehensive health care. So we did a major campaign. Again, I hope you saw it. Being a woman is not a pre-existing condition, is what we had to say, based on our report. And it really had to do with different things. It had to do with the women being charged more, being told, well, you're a woman, you're going to be charged more. Or you had a cesarean one, so we're not going to give you coverage at all. Literally, I talked to women who had letters from insurance companies that said, if you get sterilized, we'll give you coverage, but not otherwise. We also talked to women who were survivors of domestic violence, who were told, no, we're not going to cover you. And states have some laws against insurance companies using that, but actually we're doing another study right now to show how really weak they are and how the federal law will make a big difference in that category too. Whoops, wrong way. Okay, so you've already heard about this. It isn't going to be coverage for all. The Congressional Budget Office says maybe we'll get to around 93 or 94% of the population. And I wanted to point out again on the Medicaid to 133% of poverty, that's everybody. It doesn't matter if you have a child, if you're pregnant, whatever. That is a miracle in and of itself. Now, of course, states may still cover pregnant women to a higher income level, as the vast majority of them do more now. Most states are 185 or 200. And a question will be, as we move into everybody having a way to get full coverage, will states continue those programs? I mean, we obviously will advocate for them because we know that some women will fall through cracks, but that is going to be an issue. The new marketplace we've talked about, exchanges, we don't know if all the states are going to set them up, what they're going to look like, and there will be a major issue of those families whose income is above 133% of poverty, falls down below, goes up again. How will they stay eligible for an entire family package? We've already heard subsidies up to 400% of poverty in the exchange. That, of course, is on a sliding scale. And cost-sharing protection is part of that as well. But a couple people mentioned no wrong door, smooth eligibility. This will be crucial for states to deal with. Okay, so in addition to everybody having coverage, the insurance market will be changed. Hooray! No pre-existing condition refusals, no gender rating, as we call it, no different premiums based on your health status, and also there will be no limits, lifetime or annual limits. We did a study of women online. Actually, they were called the Target Moms, literally women who allegedly shop at Target. And we found that they didn't know about the law. They weren't sure it had passed, really. And starting at the beginning of the survey, about 40% were in favor of the bill. And when we said in the survey, and it was really a short survey, things like, you know, you will no longer be able to, the insurance company will no longer be able to drop your coverage when you get sick, it shot up to 53%. Now, of course, that's not as high as we would like, but this was like a 15-minute survey. And so it just indicates to us how much education is needed, and when people are educated, not that that's going to be the whole answer, we have a lot of opposition out there, but really we as a country do not know what this bill is about and what it really means for all of us. Now, we've also talked about the, I wanted to go back to the pre-existing conditions for a second, because again, this week, you see lots of talk in the paper about the Republicans saying, well, we hate that individual mandate. That's the thing we hate. That's what they're focusing on. And we know that you can't have getting rid of all pre-existing conditions and all these other things unless you have everybody paying their fair share and being part of it. So that is the battle. Going forward, one of the battles going forward, that no, you can't just get rid of the pre-existing conditions. So we feel pleased that we've made inroads so that that now is something everybody recognized must be changed. And what we have to do is go the next step and have people realize that everybody has to pay their fair share in order to get the kinds of results that we want for everyone. I wanted to focus just a minute on the essential benefit package that people have talked about already. This one now is going to be another IOM study. We have just learned that IOM is going to take this list and put a little meat on the bones. They will then send it to the Secretary of HHS and come up what that package will be. This will be the benefit package that will be offered in these exchanges, and that's for individuals and businesses up to 100 employees, and it will be also what has to be offered outside of the exchange, and I would guess over time it would become the basic health program for all of us. So I've highlighted a few things which I want to talk about a little bit. I already mentioned that maternity coverage varies a lot, at least in the individual market, in terms of what it actually means. So here's something that needs to be focused on. Is it going to be a comprehensive kind of package, or is it going to be X amount of money? That is something we'll all have to pay attention to. And contraception is another one. So again, you may have noticed it said prescription drugs in the essential benefit package. Contraception isn't really mentioned anywhere in the law. We're assuming, but we will have to make sure that contraception is part of the essential benefit package. It is covered by the vast majority of employer plans now, which should help make that case, but nevertheless, we will have to be sure. Now, the preventive services was also mentioned because there is this special, I guess what some people here are calling it, Bright Futures for Women. I hadn't actually heard that name until recently, but basically, the Institute of Medicine is doing a study on what we need to start looking at as preventive services. There already is, as many of you probably know, the United States Preventive Services Task Force, I always get that mixed up, which has a long list of services, screenings, immunizations, and so forth, that all plans will eventually have to cover with no cost sharing. This new IOM study is about what else do women need. I'm actually testifying next week at their first hearing, and a couple of the things I will be mentioning is, again, contraceptive coverage. We believe that contraception is a preventive health service that is in service of public health in this nation, so that we have healthy women and healthy space babies, and we will be making that case that it should be part of that package that every plan eventually has to cover. We'll also be talking about such things as a well woman visit and screening for domestic violence. If you have other suggestions for us, please let me know. Abortion has special rules. You may have heard some of that debate. It wasn't attractive. And I believe we're going to be facing it again in many different forms. But basically, I'll go through this kind of quickly, happy to answer questions. That basic essential benefit package cannot include abortion. But health plans, if they want to, can choose to cover abortions, either none at all of them if they want to, or what we call some, the Hyde exceptions, being the limited Medicaid abortions of the instance of rape, incest, or the life of the woman is in jeopardy. At least one plan must not cover abortion in each exchange, and the plans cannot discriminate against providers who don't want to provide abortions. We, at one point in the House bill anyway, had "and one plan must cover abortion," but that didn't make it to the end. So if a plan does cover abortion beyond, again, those federally allowed Hyde exceptions, no federal money can be used for abortion. So it's kind of a bifurcation. As you know, in the health exchange, there will be many people that have subsidies from the federal government, not all. And even those people with sliding scale subsidies will be putting in some of their own money, like all of us do for our employer plan. So what the enrollee has to do is make two separate payments with their own private money. It's a little goofy. Since it's the federal money, we don't want to pay for abortion. But still, the enrollees have to make two payments. And quite frankly, we're arguing that two payments can be made in one instrument. So like, I pay my interest in my mortgage in one check. And that's an argument we are hoping will win at the end of the day. Of course, don't know. Payments must be segregated into separate accounts by the insurance companies, the insurance commissioners. We'll figure it out and make sure it's working. States can still have abortion bans if they want to. I already mentioned that insurance plans can't discriminate, but I also wanted to mention that there's a little known provision in the law that says any entity that gets federal funds cannot discriminate against anyone on the basis of race, national origin, disability, age, or sex. We like to call this the Title IX of healthcare. We are working on trying to help get the agency to actually interpret it in a positive way, and we'll probably need a lot of help on that. This was a whole bunch of things that I just added, other provisions for women, many others were mentioned already. I mean, this bill really is just a start. We really have a lot to go to make it work, put it into a form that will be really useful in the states. And now we also have many fights ahead to keep it alive. But at least the way I think about it, I think of it as a miracle. And so let's keep going. That is all.